What would monks do without nuns? Don't answer that question. It's very nice to have you around anyway. Thank you. Thank you for coming to my talk. So this evening, I've already been told what to talk about. So it's... I'm not just going to focus on one event because it's much better to generalize and to understand when these sorts of things happen to you, how to deal with them. Because I mean, most of the people who were on that flight, we don't know what's happened to them yet. They haven't been found. But there's still that uncertainty. And a lot of times I read in newspapers when someone's gone missing, when we don't know what's happened to them, people always say, oh, yeah, they like closure. But that sort of always is some word which I don't really think exists, because there's never closure on such things. You may have some details of what happened to a person, but you know, life keeps on going on, the memories still keep going on. So there's never ever a closure, no matter what happens. And this is part of the human condition of being a human being. That no uncertainty, not knowing, is part of being a human. And the main part of this talk is going to learn how to live with such uncertainty and learn how to enjoy life in spite of not knowing what's going on. And the classic story about this is a story which is an old Buddhist story. And I keep remembering this story when I get into situations where I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know how I'm going to deal with a problem. But I can still enjoy every moment of my life, even though so sometimes the future looks desperate. And that is an old story of a fellow who was running through the jungle and he was being chased by a tiger. Now, in tigers, there's two things you should know about tigers if ever you're being chased by one. Number one, they can run much faster than you can. And number two, they're going to eat you. So it's a scary thing to being chased by a tiger in the forest, in the jungle. But this guy being chased by a tiger with a tiger catching up on him, he saw a well in the middle of the jungle. And he just instinctively just jumped into it to save his life. But as soon as he committed to jump into this well, he realized he'd made a big mistake. Because the well was dry, there's no water in the bottom. Instead, at the very bottom of the well was a big black snake. And instinctively, he grabbed onto the side of the well and caught hold of a tree root which was protruding through the side of the well, and managed to hang on to that tree root. It broke his fall. And when he came to his senses, he was halfway down this well. The noise of him falling and the earth which had been dislodged had woken up the snake. And this big snake had raised its head, opened its hood, trying to reach the man's feet. But his feet were just too high, and the snake couldn't quite reach him. And he looked up. The tiger hadn't given up yet on his dinner. The tiger was leaning over the well, trying to paw him from above. But the tiger's claws were not quite long enough. They were just not long enough to reach his hand. So there he was, between a tiger and a big black snake. And he noticed two mice come out from a hole in the side of the well, a black mouse and a white mouse. And the mice started chewing at his root, making it thinner and thinner. And the next thing he noticed happening, because the tiger on top of the well was trying to lean over to paw him, the back end of the tiger was rubbing against the tree, making the tree shake. On that tree, on a branch directly overhanging the well, was a bee's nest. And because it was being shaken, honey started to drip down from the beehive, right into the center of the well. And he leant forward and opened his mouth and caught that honey on his lips, on his tongue, and ate it. Mmm, that was such delicious honey, he said. And that is the end of the story. Now, the reason I love that story is because it's true to life. Life never has neat endings. It's always work in process. It's always a lot of uncertainty when we don't know what is going to happen next. When we've got a snake beneath us and a tiger above us and the mice, black and white, stand for night and day, always chewing at our tenuous hold on life or safety or happiness or health. And that is just so true of life. And we have a choice in life. The reason I love that story is that even though we have such uncertainty of what's going to happen next, and even though it does look dire, we're not quite sure how we're going to survive, how we're going to make it. The mice are chewing at our root, it's getting thinner, we can't hold on for much longer, there's a snake beneath us, a tiger above us, but still, there is always the honey dripping down. Mmm, that's delicious. And that is how we live our life. If anyone asks me the meaning of life, that is a very good answer to the meaning of life. Because you can all relate to that. Unfortunately, many people, they're beneath a tiger and above a snake, and they can't hold on for much longer, and they forget to enjoy the honey. Now that is the problem with human beings. We get so obsessed with our problems. We get so obsessed, you know, with trying to find out what the heck's happened to those missing people on the flight. It's important to try and find it, but don't obsess about it. Because there's honey dripping down every hour, every minute, every day. We should always enjoy that. That is the honey of life. And I don't mean just sensory pleasures. I mean love, kindness, happiness, enjoying good friends. There's so much we can enjoy. And that is what we do, even in times of uncertainty. Now, when I first heard that story, you know, just like what you do and what I do, I have a very positive mind. And I thought, I'm going to add my own ending to that story. And it's a reasonable ending. And I wrote this in my first book, Open the Door of Your Heart. How could that story end? Imagine, there you are, you can't hold on for much longer, you're enjoying the honey. The tiger. You'd always lean over, lean a bit more, lean a bit more, until the tiger toppled into the well. He missed the guy, fortunately. Fell on the snake, crushed the snake to death, and broke its own neck. That could happen. And that would allow the man, you know, to just at his leisure to climb out of the well and walk away again. How many times is that what happens in life? That sometimes the unexpected solves all the problems of our life. And we could not see it coming. That is the definition of the future. The future is what you can never see coming. It happens, and you could never have predicted that. How many of you, maybe 1, 2, 3 years ago, thought you'd be sitting here on a Friday afternoon listening to a monk? And now here you are. Okay, these people, of course, they should have expected that, especially this one sitting next to me. But you guys, what are you doing here? So this is the nature of the future. It's so unexpected that we don't know what's going to happen next. And because of that, uncertainty does not need to make us afraid. In fact, uncertainty is one of the most beautiful parts of life. It makes it interesting. It makes it open to all sorts of possibilities. If you could read the book of your life when you were born, many of you would give it in and try and get another volume. Would that be terrible if you knew exactly what's going to happen to you in life? There was no uncertainty in your life. What would that be like? There would be no life at all. There would be no sort of essence to life, no enjoyment, no achievement, nothing at all if you knew it. You'd actually probably kill yourself if you knew what was going to happen. So it's the uncertainty of life, the unknowing of life, is something which is so part of life, it should be cherished. Not just be afraid of, not trying to be solved, but the uncertainty is something which gives life its meaning. The unfolding of the unpredictable. Once one can learn to accept uncertainty, life becomes much more fun. There's so much honey all the time. And this is why when I tell these true stories, well, not all true, but some of them are, it just shows you human conditions and the way we act is just so amusing. I came very close, well, not really close to death, but people thought I came close to death some years ago in the Boxing Day tsunami. Remember that? Because I was overseas at the time. And I was in Penang at the time. And Penang was one of the cities, or the islands, which was hit by the tsunami, and several people died. It wasn't one of the worst places to be, but certain people died on Penang Island when the tsunami hit. And I was there at the time. And my second monk over in Bodhinyana Monastery, when he heard about the tsunami, and he knew I was there, he was so worried. And he was calling, ringing up, trying to find out if I had been killed, if I was still alive. And when I found out how much trouble he'd gone to make sure I was safe, I was really moved. Until he told me, well, actually, I wasn't really cared about you. I just didn't want to become the abbot if you died. There's a trouble with monks, they're always honest. That's the only reason he's calling around. But isn't that, it's a beautiful part of life. That's what human beings are like. And so sometimes having that uncertainty in life is part of life. Now, one of the stories I haven't told you was, you know, my early years as a monk in Thailand. Now, when I came here, I was with another monk. Many of you remember him, Ajahn Jakaro. And when I first went to Thailand, Ajahn Chah, he would send monks here, send monks there. And this is a true story about him, which I remember, because Ajahn Chah was teaching him how to live with uncertainty and to embrace it and not be afraid of it. Because Ajahn Chah, we had a big meeting and he was sending a monk here, a monk there, and he told Namli, Ajahn Jakaro was a former abbot here, he told Ajahn Jakaro, you're going to go and spend the rains retreat at this place called Suan Glui. It was like banana plantation. Okay. And then Ajahn Chah was quiet, and the next day, Ajahn Jakaro said, well, when am I going to go there? And then Ajahn Chah changed the subject. And he went the next day, and the next day. And I remember him come to see me. He said, Ajahn Chah won't tell me when I'm going to go. And he kept going there every day to ask him when he can go so he can actually make arrangements. And Ajahn Chah would never tell him. And this went on for about 2 weeks. You know, and Ajahn Chah every time said, well, when am I going to go? I need to make preparations. And Ajahn Chah would never tell him. And then one day, Ajahn Jakaro never went to ask. And then Ajahn Chah told me, you're going the next day. He was teaching him how to live with uncertainty. And that's actually how my master used to teach us. Always teaching us, you know, just through actions and activities. Because sometimes, you know, I'd be very happy in a monastery somewhere, having a good time. And he'd come and say, oh, you're going to have to go to another monastery. I said, when? Tomorrow? No, in 30 minutes. And, you know, he just, in a couple of hours, you're in another part of the northeast of Thailand. And that was a sort of uncertainty which we were trained to be able to live with. You never know what was going to happen next. And you learn to deal with that and accept that and actually enjoy it. It is wonderful not having certainty in life. As long as you have the confidence, which you really should have, otherwise the lack of fear, the confidence that you're going to be able to manage it. And it's going to make life far more interesting. When you do have that uncertainty, and you learn to live with it. One of the reasons we're afraid of uncertainty is because, you know, we just make so many plans. And the planning thing I've kept on saying, it causes too many problems in our life. When you have a plan, it means all these other great opportunities, they come up and you miss them because they're not part of your plan. So please make any plans just so tentative. just rubbery plans. So you can change them at a moment's notice if something better comes up. Isn't that a wonderful thing to do? Because life is uncertain. You don't know what's going to happen next. And when you take that opportunity, when something happens, you have an incredible, wonderful life. Now, who knows what the opportunity... This is especially people having businesses. Now, the business environment changes so quickly that people who have... I tell this in business school. People who have such concrete plans of what they're going to do in the future, they miss opportunities which are happening right now. It's like looking far too far down the road. You know, you fall in the open manhole, which is right in front of you now. And that's so much of our life. We're looking too far ahead with too many plans. And not accepting, just know life is uncertain. So let's actually live with that uncertainty, accept it, embrace it, and it's not as bad as people think. So, you know, when Cecilia said, what are you going to talk about tonight? Have you made any plans? I never make any plans about what I'm going to talk about tonight. That's why I have much more fun. You know, and sometimes I say things. I say, where did that come from? I never planned that. You know, even I listen to my talks. No, certainly. And then sometimes an interesting thing comes. But when you have great plans, when you're afraid, which is the biggest thing, we're afraid of uncertainty. We don't know how we're going to handle it. Please have confidence that you'll always do something with uncertainty. But again, I was talking to somebody earlier that they said about mistakes in life. You know, there's no such thing as a mistake in life. It's judging. You know, I should have done something different. You know, maybe I shouldn't have dumped that girlfriend, or maybe she shouldn't have dumped me. Then I'd be happy. I wouldn't have to be a monk and spend all Friday evenings teaching in here. But you don't know what would have happened if you made a different decision. That's why some of you think, oh, why did I marry her? You know, I was a stupid thing to marry that girl. If you hadn't married her, you may have married someone much worse. You don't know what would have happened. That's why, you know, there's another word I invented. You know that sometimes you hear religious talks, and especially when they start talking about God or they start talking about Nibbana, and you ask them what the heck does it mean, and they say a beginning and end of all things, blah, blah, blah. One of the words they say is ineffable. Have you heard that word before? Ineffable. And you know, I haven't got a clue what that word means. But instead, I use that word to make another word which is far more useful. Ineffable. And for me, the past is ineffable. You can't if the past. You can't say, if I'd have taken another job. If I'd have passed that exam. If I hadn't gone out that night, what would have happened? You don't know what would have happened. It's the same with those people who thought, oh, I shouldn't have been on that flight, MH370. No, it was a mistake. I didn't really need to go on that. I could have gone on another flight. You can't if the past. You don't know what would have happened if you'd have taken another road in life. When I always think about that, it means I don't know what would have happened if I'd have made another choice. So how can I call it a mistake? How can I call it a right decision, a wrong decision? It's just a decision, that's all. And I can't if it. If I'd have done something else. If I hadn't have said that stupid joke. If I hadn't have done that. Was that the stupid joke? Did I tell last time the joke about the two old men? In the two 80-year-olds? Okay. I know you told me not to tell any jokes. This is a serious talk, but I can't help myself. It's just who I am. There was these two 80-year-olds, and they would always meet every now and again, you know, just in the park, you know, tell a few stories, you know, solve the problems of the world, you know, feed the pigeons. And they became close friends. And one day, one of the men never turned up. And his other mate, his friend, got very, very concerned. His mate never turned up. But thought, you know, he's old. He's in his late 80s. Could get a cold or a flu or something. But when he never turned up for a whole month, his friend thought he may have died. So you can imagine just how relieved he felt when his friend turned up after 1 month. And he said, I was so worried about you. I thought you died. Whatever happened to you? And this guy said, well, actually, I went to prison. He said, how old are you? He said, I'm 89. I spent 30 days in prison. How on earth did you end up in prison? And he said, well, you know that beautiful young girl who serves us coffee in the cafe sometimes? She accused me of rape. And when I went to court, I was so flattered, I pleaded guilty. And the judge gave me 30 days in prison for lying. Any people over 60 or 70, you can appreciate that. So yeah, that's a nice joke which somebody here sent me, which is very good. But that's why even in the middle of difficulties, you can always have a bit of fun and think, what if I hadn't told that joke? Would it have been better talk? I don't know. You can't if the past. I told it, okay, it's done, finish. Or, you know, sort of, you know, sometimes people say about bhikkhunis, and if I hadn't ordained bhikkhunis, what would have happened? I don't know. You can't if it at all. That's why the past, you always let it go. And there's no such thing as mistakes anymore. And if you get that idea about the past, then you look at the future in the same way. You can't sort of, you know, if this happens or if that happens. Even the future is ineffable. You can't if it, what might happen if, you know, we find those people, or if we find them alive, if we find them dead. You don't know what might happen. But what you do know is if you have this wise, kind mind, whatever happens, you can always deal with. So whatever happens, what do you do with it? You know, when you find somebody who you've loved very much has now died, if you find them dead, then you realize you value, you know, the life you've had, the times you had together. Whenever there's a death, sometimes we think, what's happened after the death? Oh, they're not going to be around anymore. But I keep telling people that if you are suffering grief over the death of a loved one, please remember of all the wonderful times you've had together. It's my story of the concert. When my father died, you've heard this before, this is a beautiful story. When my father died at 16, I never cried. Never cried since. And I love my father very much. I've told many stories about him. And the reason I never cried, really, I couldn't understand. I was only 16 years of age. Later on, I contemplated my emotions. As a monk, you've got more time to spend, you know, to contemplate how you feel, what emotion is, why it is, where it comes from. That's what meditation does. It really gets you very aware of your emotional world. And so when I found out what I felt, I realized the emotion I felt at my father's death, funeral, and afterwards was exactly the same as another emotion I often felt, which was after going to a concert in London. Go to all these great concerts. I just saw, just as coming up here, that there's, I think, in some hotel just on Charles Street, that they were doing a concert in honor of the Doors. And I remember going to see the Doors, you know, at this roundhouse in Chalk Farm, 2 hours Doors, followed by 2 hours of Jefferson Airplane, another 2 hours of Doors, you know, all night, sort of concert. Great time I used to have in those days. And I remember after the concert was finished, and I walk home, never once did I feel sad that the concert was finished. I never cried after great performances. And the emotion I had, I remember very clearly, when I walked out of concert halls, was saying how lucky I was to have been there for these amazing performances. You know, I never forget those concerts which I went to in London. You know, if it was 45, 50 years ago, I can still remember them. I say 50 years ago, I went to see the Rolling Stones when I was only 11. Sneaking in when they're getting famous. These are beautiful memories I have, even though, you know, that they're gone. I cherish and I value. Thank you for having those memories. Thank you for being my father for 16 years. It was a marvelous concert. Thank you so much. Even though the concert ended, I never cried. I felt gratitude, not grief. It's a different way of looking. When you have that, you know that whatever happens, someone in your life is very sick. If they survive, wonderful. If they die, wonderful. It's the attitude you have means uncertainty is not a fear anymore. and as you know, if a person does live, it's wonderful, you have more time with them. And the fact that they were close to death, as you've often experienced, makes your relationship just so much more valuable and important. You know, when you've come close to death and you've got through it, it gives a whole different meaning to life. You know, the things which weren't important before now become really important. Being right is not important anymore. You know, being in love, being kind, that is important, not being right. How many people just say, break their lives? They break up partnerships, they break up family, they break up this beautiful relationship because I'm right and you're wrong. No, 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 no. I'm right and you're wrong. That's a disgusting thing to actually to put between two people. It does not matter who's right and who's wrong. That's not the important thing in life. The important thing in life is to be kind to one another. Love is more important than being right. If you only realize that, and sometimes we realize that when it comes to like a close death experience. Now, what is really important in life? I'm sure that, please excuse me, but many of the people who are on that flight probably had arguments, with the people who were waiting for them and worried sick about them, before they left. Because that's what we do in families. That's what husbands and wives, children and parents do all the time. Argue over who's right and who's wrong. In the time of close to death, that doesn't become important anymore. Other things become far more valuable. And arguments seem to be such a waste of time. Which is why I always say, if you think that, this is wine and not water, fine, you can think it's wine. But, it's not, it's water. But whatever you think is fine by me. I'm not going to argue with you. So, it's that Elis water, by the way, so I don't want to get into trouble. But why is it we always argue about life? And that's why one of the things the Buddha said. He said, I don't argue with the world. The world argues with me sometimes, but I don't argue with the world. It's a very beautiful, compassionate to the world, kind to the world, at peace with the world. There's other things which are much more important. So when these things actually happen, we learn so much from them. Which is why that when there is any tragedy in your life, it's a great opportunity for wisdom, for learning. You learn much more from those than you'd ever learn sitting here listening to me. You learn the meaning of life. And that's so why there is a tragedy that sometimes, they say, well, what should we do about this? And I always answer, well, what are you learning from this? That a plane disappears. What we're learning is life is uncertain. We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know where people go. We have to learn to live with that. We have to accept that. That's part of life. But when that is happening and we're between the snake and the tiger, please enjoy the honey of life which is dripping down from moment to moment. Otherwise, we're wasting so much of our life. When we do have a situation like that, when it is our sort of father, our mother who was on that aircraft, it's our father and mother who's disappeared while swimming off Cottesloe Beach, it's our son who hasn't, who's got caught up in some earthquake in Chile, and we're not quite sure how they are. Sometimes the reason why we can't enjoy the honey in the meantime, is because of this terrible thing we have of obsession of a particular type of thought. The obsession, the simile which I have given and I've given here to you, mostly actually in private afterwards when you come up to talk about your problems in life, is the obsession of how big is a hand. Now, how big is a hand? My hand is now so big I can't see anybody. All the people sitting in front of me, I can't see you, I can't see the world, I can't see anything, I can't see the moon and the stars. All I can see is my hand. Is it my hand's problem? Of course it's not. It's the perspective. My hand is being held too close to me. When I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, my hand is still the same size, but now I can see each one of you, and I can see the moon and the stars, I can see life. But one of the problems when we have a tragedy, we hold it so close to us, we can't see anything else except worrying about the fate of our loved ones on an aircraft which has disappeared. It's understandable, but there is another way if you really want to enjoy the honey dripping down the well when there's a snake below you and a tiger above you. please have a bit of perspective. One of those perspectives is the old "this too will pass" story. The old "this too will pass" story, the emperor's ring, a young man became an emperor, did not know how to run a kingdom. So whenever the economy was going well, there was a boom, and everyone was happy, he would have too many celebrations, too many parties. And because of too many parties, he was not doing anything to run the country. So the good times never lasted that long. And when there was problems in the economy, when all the manufacturing was going overseas and the boom was ending and people couldn't get jobs and there was no money for schools, I shouldn't get into politics. He got so depressed, he spent hours in his room just in misery, depressed, not being able to do anything. Because he couldn't do anything, again, the bad times lasted longer than ever. And a wise minister decided to try and help the emperor become a wiser ruler in a very simple way by getting a goldsmith, a jeweler, to make a ring for the emperor, a simple gold ring, except the words on the outside of the ring, "This too will pass." And told the emperor to wear this on all occasions. And the emperor did that. So when there was any trouble or tragedy, he would always look at the ring. "This too will pass." And of course it always does. Now you may be battling a cancer. You may have a child who's in problems with the police and with drugs. You know, you may be a person who is waiting on news of finding survivors or no survivors on that flight. You are in trouble. But you know it does pass. It will always pass. And so, nevertheless, even though you're in trouble, you still work. And because that emperor never got so depressed, knowing that the bad times will pass, it meant he was active. He did things, which meant the bad times never lasted that long. But the most important part of that ring was when there were good times, when the economy was booming, you know, when people were happy, he still worked his butt off. He never took the good times for granted. Because he also said, "The good times, this too will pass." Which made him one of the most effective emperors the kingdom had ever known. And of course, I think you can understand what that story means. Yeah, when there's trouble, you know, you get depressed, upset. Please remember, it will pass. But when things are going well for you, when you've got a good relationship and a nice kid, care for this moment. It will pass. And so, if you know the good times will pass, you cherish them. You don't take them for granted, which means they last longer and longer and longer. So when we have an event like an aircraft and people going missing, it's a terrible thing to endure, but it does pass. But when it does pass, don't think, "Oh, it's, you know, we're back to normal now." This is not normal. You know, having sort of tragedies is normal. You know, having difficulties is normal. So when you have that rest between the difficulties, when things are going well in your life, don't take them for granted. Don't know how many relationships between men and women, or men and men, women and women, break down because you take each other for granted. You think, "Okay, now we're married, now we're committed, I don't need to work anymore." And I used to see that in Thailand, because it was a very poor village. You could see who were the unmarried girls. They would wear all these beautiful clothes. And as soon as they got married, because we gave the blessing for them, then they wore rags. And they passed all the beautiful clothes to the younger sister. You know, to try and sort of attract a partner. Now that's, you know, that's only a little metaphor. How often is it that when you're going out with each other, you really care for each other, you look out for each other. But as soon as you get married, you take each other for granted. Now, please never do that. You know, even if you've been married for 30 or 40 years, you should be going out with each other just like you're going out for the first date. Can you do that? if you can, your relationship is really, really going up several notches. Never take people for granted. And never take yourself for granted. Never take your health for granted. Never take your safety for granted. You don't know what's going to happen next. So when there is honey dripping down, just enjoy it. Don't take it for granted. Don't think it's going to come tomorrow. It's come now, right in this moment. Enjoy the honey, even though you don't know what's going to happen next. And again, because the future is so unpredictable, my theory of what happened is plausible. It could happen, and so often it does. So that means we don't worry. We don't have fear about the future. We have this beautiful openness. We can accept uncertainty. We live with the uncertainty. We cherish uncertainty in life. And if life was so certain, then my life would be so incredibly boring. And just, it would have no challenge to it, nothing to really stretch your muscles, nothing to actually to make you grow, nothing which would actually make you a better, wiser, more kinder person. It's only in those times of adversity we see how kind people can be. Now we see when, you know, we think about the relations of, and the people, the friends of the people who were in that flight, we can be so compassionate and kind to them. Why can't we be compassionate and kind to people who right now don't know whether their mother or their father is going to last tonight in the ICU? We don't know. Can't we be kind and compassionate to people right now, whoever they are, even when they're having a good time? That is why that I was always taught that our kindness, now our hard work goes to people without any discrimination. Not just the people who are in pain and suffering, but even the people who are happy as well, to be kind to all beings, without exception. And that really takes my life to a totally different level. You're not just focusing on the people who are suffering, because we're all potentially suffering, so we care about everybody. And that is a beautiful thing, which does give us the only thing we can be certain of for our future. I talked about how uncertain life is. But what is really certain is that if you can develop that kindness and that right attitude, that you will always be safe wherever you go. Whenever I go overseas, I don't take an insurance policy with me. I've got no travel insurance. I've got the Medicare card, but no private health insurance. You know I don't need it. Not because, you know, nothing's ever going to happen to me, or I'm totally healthy. I don't need it because I've made such good karma, such good friends. I've been so kind and caring to so many people throughout the world. I know that if something goes wrong with me, if I get sick in Singapore or Malaysia or Sri Lanka or Vietnam or any place I go, I know there'll be many people fighting to look after me. No, I want to send him to my hospital. No, no. I want to look after him. No, no, no. You looked after him last time. It's my turn. And that actually happens. So that is my, and that is your insurance policy as well. Your good karma, your kindness. If you have done a lot of good karma, a lot of kindness, then your family and friends, that's your insurance policy. In times of economic difficulty, who looks after you? When you're really sick, who really looks after you? It's not just the hospital. It's all the beautiful people you've met in your life. The ones you've cared for, now they care for you. Now that is what gives a sense of certainty in your life. There is kindness, there is care, and quite frankly, even if you haven't helped other people, there's such beautiful people in this world, they would help you anyway, no matter who you are or what you've done in your life. That's such a beautiful thing in life. Someone is sick. I don't care if you're a criminal, if you've done some really bad things. You're sick, I'm going to help you. There's a beautiful thing about compassion. It is totally indiscriminate. Just the Buddha described it as like the sun. It shines on everybody without choosing. Now, you're a bad person. I'm not going to shine on you. But you're okay. I'll shine on you. Everyone gets a beautiful sun of compassion and kindness. And that's what I strive to do because that's what I've been taught to do. And encourage to do it. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to have. And that is what is your certainty for the future. When there's such goodness and kindness in this world, and you see it every day, maybe not on the 6 o'clock news, but you see it in the street, you see it in many, many places, that really brings up a beautiful sense of certainty in this world that there is kindness, there is love around, and you can be part of it. And that means no matter what happens to you, no matter, you know, terrible things happen, great things happen, there are so many people who care about you that whatever happens, you're going to be fine. You are going to be looked after. You are going to sort of have someone come into your bedside, bringing you flowers or bringing you something or other, which is a beautiful thing to know. So this is a certainty which we have in our world, the certainty of, you know, goodness and kindness. And you can make that even more powerful by everything you can do. If there's any possibility, there's someone who's sick, you know, you don't really know them, but I, well, know them good enough, I'm going to go and see them anyway. I have a great time whenever I go into a hospital. I go and, you know, go and say hello to people I don't even know. And they really get off on that and say, hi, how are you today? And say, who are you? I don't know. I don't know you either, but how are you today? Isn't there something beautiful about that? It's a bit crazy, but it's good. And everybody sort of tends to accept that and value that. So that is something which is certain in life. All the other stuff, you know, is a bit uncertain. So when you have any tragedy like that, it's amazing how it brings out some goodness and kindness in people. You know, how whenever there's any disaster which happens in the world, it does bring communities together, it does bring out the best in human beings. That's why disasters, tragedies are opportunities. And when I look at it that way, an opportunity for people to rise to a higher level of kindness and understanding and working, looking after each other. I think in that flight there's only about 6 Australians, I think there were. None of them were from Perth, were they? There was some from Perth. Oh, that was okay. But most of the people were from China, some from Malaysia and other countries. So we don't really know them. Nevertheless, we care. It's a beautiful thing about humanity. You don't have to be a family member. You don't have to even know a person. But still, we can care for them. So imagine how many people care for you, even though you don't even know them. It's a beautiful thing to know. So that brings up tragedies as opportunities, as a great places where we can get inspired by life, not always afraid of life. Whatever happens in life, you can look at always two ways. It's up to you. You can't change the world. Plane crashes will happen. These things will occur. Terrorist attacks will happen. People will die. Road crashes will happen. But we can't change the world, but my goodness, we can change the way we look at it. And instead of saying, oh, this is terrible, this is awful. No, this is an opportunity. An opportunity for you to get wiser and kinder. An opportunity for you to value your life much more because you know it will pass. You never know, you step in an aircraft, what's going to happen next. And I can't help but finishing on a nice note about, you know, when this guy went on an aircraft. And because I started off with dogs, this guy went on an aircraft and there was a dog sitting next to him on the aircraft. And he said, what's a dog doing on the aircraft? And the other fellow next to the dog said, oh, this is a security dog. And he said, look, I'll show you how it works. And so he sent the dog up to the first class cabin. And the dog came back, wagged its tail and barked once. And the handler said, oh, that's amazing. That's a sign for heroin. We have a heroin smuggler on this plane in the first class. So then he sent the dog into business class. Let's see what's up in business class. And the dog came back, barked twice, and wagged its tail. He said, oh, that's the sign for cocaine. You know, there's cocaine on here as well. And then he sent the dog to economy class. And there he smelt another person and came back, and it's a backpacker. And he barked 3 times, wagged its tail. Oh, that's marijuana. This guy's got marijuana in his backpack. Let's see what else is on there. So he sent this to the back of the plane. There was another guy sitting there. And each time the dog came back, and he wasn't wagging its tail. Its tail was between its legs. And it was whining and jumped up on its seat and pooed on its seat. So what does that mean? He said, oh, that means there's a bomb on the plane. So remember, even in tragedy, there's always honey. So please enjoy the honey. Thank you for listening. Sorry, I was told not to tell any jokes, but sorry, I can't. So anyway, let's get some questions on how to deal with uncertainty. We've got some from overseas, so let's get those first of all. Thank you. Here we go. I've only got one question from Japan. Okay, did the Buddha encourage transfer of merits for relatives who have passed away to make afterlife better? If yes, what is the correct way of doing it, according to him? Thank you. This is like a Buddhist custom. It's actually not really a Buddhist custom. I see this in like other religions as well, like in the Catholic Church. You know, somebody dies, you do a mass for them, or you light a candle for them, or whatever. Look, there's two ways of looking at this. First of all, that sometimes when somebody dies, you know, you have unfinished business with them. You want to give them something. I know when my father died, you know, I always felt I wanted to do something for him, to give him something. And I asked myself, why? You know, he's dead. Why do I want to give something? Because giving is an expression of love. Now, people you love, you like to give presents to. It's not just Valentine's Day, birthdays, any day. And so that idea of generosity is so close, you know, to loving somebody or loving something. So I realized that, you know, I still love my father. I wanted to do something for him, to give him something. And that is a beautiful thing to do, even if it's like what sometimes we do in Buddhism, we dedicate a book to him. There's some books in the library over here. If you look in the front cover, it's, you know, some of the reference books dedicated in the memory to William Betts. That's my father. So, you know, somebody gave me, said, anything you need, yeah, get me this book. I want to dedicate it to my father. That's a beautiful thing to do. I needed to do that. And so sometimes when somebody dies, you want to do something for them. And a lot of times I tell them, well, what did they like doing in life? You know, were they sort of some part of Surf Life Saving? Give a donation to the Surf Life Saving Club. You know, in their memory. You know, if they came here, give a donation to the temple here if they like to come here. If they like to go to the pub, give a donation. No, maybe don't do that. But, you know, something which they would really like, you know, in their memory. And so that's a really wonderful thing to do. And that is also we have in Buddhism, even to transfer motives, to do something for somebody who passed away. Now, first of all, I'm just saying that's important for the ones who are left behind, for the relations. You know, I needed to do that. Whether my father gets anything out of it, that's another matter. But what happens is that people who've been together for a long time, who've loved one another, they do get a connection together. And even animals and you have a great connection. One story, when I was visiting Melbourne, I read this in the Melbourne Age, there was a vet who finished work early on a Friday afternoon and went to somewhere in country Victoria for a nice weekend party with his friends. So on the way, maybe 2-3 hour journey, in the middle of the journey, he was overcome with unexpected, intense grief. And it was so bad, he had to stop his car, park by the side of the road, and just weep for about 15 or 20 minutes. And he hadn't got a clue why. He just felt like crying. And when he pulled himself together and drove off to this house where he was going to have the weekend party with his friends, the message was waiting for him. His dog had been hit by a car at precisely the time he'd had this attack of grief. There's no way he could have known that. Somewhere in Melbourne, his dog had died, and maybe 60 kilometres away, he felt incredible grief and he had to stop. That is not uncommon. There is a connection between people. If you've got a son or a daughter, say, in New York, and they suddenly get sick or they have an accident, you know there's something wrong. How does that happen? There's a connection between loved ones, and that connection is still there after death. somebody's died, and they know, you know, if you're in trouble. That's why you get all these incredible experiences. There's one lady, she's not here, thank goodness, she was driving down to Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, you know, to offer some food for the monks. She promised she'd go that day. What happened the night before was that, you know, her business had this very important order. She was up all night packing the order, so she hadn't slept all night. And she made a promise, she had to keep it, so she was driving alone down the southwest highway between Armidale and Serpentine. Three times, she said, she fell asleep at the wheel. The first time she fell asleep by herself, she hadn't slept all night, she felt someone slap her hard across the cheek. She woke up, she was going straight towards a truck. She had enough time to swerve and get onto the right side of the road. The next time she fell asleep, she was veering off the side of the road into the gravel. Another slap woke her up. Three times that happened, she said. No, you may, no, this is a lady I trust. I know that what she was saying was true. She wouldn't lie to me. How on earth can that happen? Someone was looking after her. Someone knew she was in trouble. And they come and help you. I don't know, many of you may have had those experiences yourself. Weird experiences, sometimes you think you're imagining it, but there is a connection there. And it also goes the other way as well. That you can do something which your, say your father, your mother, or your husband, your wife will be so proud of. So I know that if I do something my mum or my dad are really proud of, they will get this big boost of happiness. Their son is doing something really good. Just like if your son was alive now, parents are just so proud. That's my dad. That's my boy. That's my guy. They get happiness out of your goodness. And that, to me, is one of the ways where we can have this so-called transfer of goodness. You do something good now, and your parents, maybe they're dead, they would know. And they'd be so happy that their children are doing something good for them. Now, one of the funerals I went to some years ago, one of the best funerals I went to, family members came, sisters who hadn't talked together for years. They'd fallen out, some argument, who's right and who's wrong again. And I just sat them down and said, look, this is your dad has died, your mother died a long time ago. For goodness sake, can you give a gift to your dad and just reconcile? For your dad, he's dead. And they actually did it. It's such a wonderful thing to have that reconciliation. To see sisters who hadn't talked to each other for years hug in front of the coffin. And say they forgive each other. That is transferring of merits. Doing something really, really kind, very, very good, which, you know, the person who's dead will be so happy about. Thank you so much for doing that. Of course they'd be happy. They would know. And they would be beaming. And that, you know, gives them a happy rebirth, reincarnation. So doing something, it's not just giving donations and stuff. That's easy to do. Give something really, really hard. Forgiveness. Letting go of hurt. And now that is transferring of merits. So that's sometimes what we can do when somebody dies. So for the relatives of those who were in that aircraft, you know, the people are probably dead. No one really knows. But at least do something for them. Don't just cry. Don't just be sad. That's the last thing, you know, your loved ones would want of you. Just be kind to one another. If you've had any breakups in your family, mend them out of respect for the people who were on that flight. That is how we transfer merits. Anyway, there's only one question on the machine. So any questions from the audience here? Yeah.
My question isn't about uncertainty. It's about a comment you've made on several occasions. It's to do with you don't learn from the past. Mm. I understand letting go of the past, but the way I see it, I don't understand that comment because I think all of our knowledge is based on, and our skills are based on what we've learnt in the past. So can you please explain it to me?
Very good, yes. As I once told some people, never let your learning stand in the way of truth. Because the past is how we've been taught. And I don't know what profession you are in, but if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, if you're a therapist, sometimes all that you've been taught, you have to put aside to see what the real problem is and what the solution is. Have you noticed that so much of our knowledge tells us what should be, how we should behave, how we should treat a person? And we're not really seeing what we can do right now. Other alternatives. So too much of learning, and what I've been taught, what Buddhism teaches, what Christianity teaches, what is right, what is wrong. Sometimes you pull all that aside and you see what's right in front of you. And you learn much more from that. So often, that's why I say I don't think what I'm going to teach, what I'm going to say. And when people come up to me asking about their problems, everything I've ever been taught, I always discard. And just listen. And in the moment, you can see much, much more what needs to be said, what needs to be done, what the solution is. Too much learning, unfortunately, stops people seeing the truth.
Thank you.
I apologize for those people who are at universities. But you know what it's like at universities these days? You know, you're told, you know, what's right and what's wrong. You're really taught what you need to pass the exams. You're not really taught how to think and how to see. And the great discoveries of life come from the rebels, the ones who don't fit in and who challenge even the most sacred of dogmas in a university. That's why if ever we started a Buddhist university, you know, I've already got the slogan for it. You know, everyone has to have a motto. And it's where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. It's a very beautiful little saying. And unfortunately in life, everyone thinks the same. So be a rebel. And then it's life, where everyone thinks the same, no one thinks at all. That's where learning teaches us how to think. It doesn't really. It teaches us how to think, it doesn't teach us how to see. I hope I haven't offended you, but that's what I really mean. Okay, very good. But what I really meant with that is people just keep obsessing about what happened in the past. And you think, I have to go and solve that problem by thinking about who did what, and maybe I could do something better next time. And just keep revisiting the past usually doesn't work. So we let go of the past. And in this moment, you can actually see what you're doing now. And that's where, you know, good relationships, good careers, good life, it's all built right now. Let the past be. If we have the past, we have the conflict in the Middle East, conflict in Iraq, who did what to whom. And when we're just still fighting the wars of the past, you know, we're not enjoying the love of the present. Where does love and compassion live? Wars and hatred live in the past. Fear lives in the future. Love and peace live in the present. So that's where we learn from. Any other questions, comments, complaints? I just want to complain. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, complaint from Eddie.
No, complete algebra. No, just sharing regarding transference of merit to the departed. Yeah, it is not a Buddhist practice, but it is from what I understand. Okay, it is a cultural practice. You know, okay. So when Buddhism went to from India, for example, to China, the cultural practice is they mingle it with Buddhism. You know.
Yeah.
Because you see, from what I understand, like Chinese Buddhism, okay, there's a lot of influence from Taoism and Confucianism. And especially Confucius, okay, he propagates filial piety, you know. You know? Yeah. And then the transcendental was practiced, okay, in China. And when Buddhism went there, they link it with Buddhism.
That's right, yeah. Because a lot of Buddhism has been just culture from different countries. And I'm sure that after a few more years, we're going to have some Australian additions to Buddhist culture. I'm not quite sure what it might be. I'm just waiting to see an Australian Buddha statue with a hat and corks on the front. I don't know. See what happens. No, with a hat with corks. I'm just thinking out loud. But no, it is true. But it's good to know. But if it's useful, you know, it gets incorporated, which is a wonderful thing. Not sort of demeaning the original teachings, but some of the things like, you know, I'm realizing you have to do something and give when there's somebody who dies. It's an expression of love to give them something, to give for them. That's a beautiful tradition. So, yeah, it was added afterwards, but it's beautiful, so we'll keep it. Anyway, that's my thing. Anyway, thank you for all coming this evening, and another talk next week. In the meantime, we're now going to pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, and then you can come and ask other questions.